Here we go. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, it looks like we got a little rain here at the radio station. There was only a few drops as I was driving in from the foothills area, but looks like we got, judging by the puddles.
Well, this is the part of town we want the rain, because the airport is where they have the official tally for the rain totals, and they're not far from here.
And we're about an inch below second place for the all-time monsoon.
And we'll take second.
Yeah, we'll take second. And a friend just posted from my old hometown of Wilmette, Illinois, which is just north of Chicago, a picture at the beach. Whoa, 16-foot waves on Lake Michigan today. I'm not quite sure what's going on back there, but I remember growing up as a kid one time, somebody had a surfboard, and we tried. Yes, true story. When I was in high school, we tried to go surfing. Now, today, on a day like this, it might have really worked.
6-foot waves, you can definitely surf them.
Yeah, it was 16-foot.
16-foot?
16-foot waves on Lake Michigan today. So,
and you have to be a more accomplished surfer to take those on.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, Buckmaster Show Thursday, September the 23rd already, 2021. We're in our 11th year. We'll close out the 11th year at the end of December and start year number 12 in January right here in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030. Tucson's voice for trusted news talk worldwide, live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. The live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And without further ado, we go to the live line, Pima County Supervisor, Democrat representing District Number 1, and the chairwoman of the Tucson Unified School District Board, Adelita Grijalva. Supervisor Grijalva, Chairwoman Grijalva, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you? I represent District 5.
Oh, boy, what am I? Okay. Oh, yes, yes, yes. District 1, of course, is my district, Rex Scott's district. So maybe I was thinking about... home area, and thank you for correcting me on that. Some are saying we're at an all-time low in relations between Pima County and the city of Tucson. Are you buying into that?
I don't think we are. I think there's certain issues that we need to work more collaboratively on, but the rollout of our COVID testing and rollout of the COVID vaccines really showed that we work really well together when we have a shared mission. And so there are some issues that are coming up, like the differential water rates. That's an issue that, we need to work through. But overall, I'd say that we're doing our best to try to work more collaboratively and more regional.
Yeah, the two elephants in the room are the water issue and transportation, i.e. the RTA. Let's begin with water. We had Mayor Romero with me in studio yesterday, Supervisor Grijalva, and she was talking about the fact that the differential water rate is on track to go ahead. At the same time, Mr. Huckleberry, the Pima County Administrator, is pretty much setting the table for legal action. Would you like to see legal action avoided at all costs in this matter?
Yes, I would. I would like to see legal action avoided. I think that our energies can be best spent working on ways that we can improve our regional approach. And so what I was hoping for is really quantifying what the cost difference is, and really looking towards conservation versus, you know, depending on where you live and what the cost would be. And so really looking at those families that have pools, that use more water consumption, that we would have to pay a significant amount more regardless of where we live. And then those families that are doing their best to keep, you know, the water usage down, those households that are doing their best, that they would see little to no change in their water rates. So I was hoping that we would go more for that approach, because when we were talking about this, this pending issue of the drought that we're facing continues to loom. And we've seen historically that really behaviors don't change until there's some sort of unfortunately, negative consequence. There has to be this incentive and the disincentives, and I was hoping we would use that route instead.
Your colleague, Supervisor Christie, says this is just a shot across the bow, and he says this rate hike is part of this, what he sees as a larger regional power grab by the city. Do you see then some merits with this different, you mentioned the water conservation piece of this, so you do see some merit in the differential water rate increase?
I do, but not based on where you live in Pima County and whether you're in unincorporated or in the city. It has to do more with your consumption. And so I do think that there is merit in that because we are dealing with a drought. And so there are other cities that are doing much more drastic moves before kind of in the situation that we're in now. So I'd like to see that happen before we start seeing, you know, forced reductions of water use, which is not something that is that we're talking about yet. But other cities that are dealing with the same kind of drought are. So I'd like to see that. And you know, unfortunately, there has been, and I noticed it before, more so now in the office, this really, this conflict between the city and the county and this push and pull. And I think for myself, Mr. Scott, Supervisor Scott and Supervisor Hines, we're doing our best to try to mitigate some of that whenever possible, depending on what the issue is, because we had the first joint city and county meeting. I'd like to see more of those. I think it gives us an opportunity to sort of voice our concerns, talk about and start to minimize the contention between the city and the county.
Then there's the whole transportation issue and the role of the Regional Transportation Authority, and the RTA will be coming up for renewal within 5 years. Are you a supporter of the RTA, Adelita Grijalva?
I would like the RTA. I like the concept of having it a regional plan on how to roll out transportation, our transportation needs and our roadways. That is a really huge issue here in Pima County. But the way the voting, the weights of the voting really is not equitable for districts like District 5 and District 2, those of us that the supervisory districts that have more of the city versus unincorporated Pima County, we're at a huge disadvantage when it comes to some of those projects. And so we've seen it with even the proposal that was passed at our last board meeting, where only 2.5% of the $50 million expenditure for roads that the county's going to take bonds out for is being dedicated into District 5. And so I think there's this big push to look at, you know, the outskirts, and very little effort except for whatever the city puts in into our arterial roadways.
Each representative of the city has each representative of Pima County, each city, and the tribal nations have a representative at the table on the RTA, on the RTA board. And the RTA claims that if they change that to more of a weighted situation, that really it's a state mandate. It would be out of their control. They can't do that. What do you say to that?
My understanding is there's been legal arguments that that's not the case, and that you can have weighted votes because other RTAs have it. And initially, when entering into the agreement, the then mayor and the then chair of the Board of Supervisors decided that they didn't want to look at weights. Well, now we're at a different time, and we'd like to see what that would look like. We also, from tribal representatives, are all supportive of weighted votes because their impact is really very little. And they have to look to the Pima County representative. They might be at the table, but their vote has very little impact.
So water, transportation, where is there? You mentioned COVID. There's been cooperation. Is there cooaperation anywhere else that you can see between the city?
We're looking at internet and infrastructure for our access, you know, a lot more equitable distribution. I know that the city is doing what they can to work with us for transportation needs in Tucson Unified, which would impact countywide, because, you know, the needs of our students are really high on our priorities. And so I do see an effort from the mayor's office and the city council to do more collaboratively. And I think that having meetings together would help that. Because you know, we're talking about, I'm sure the mayor had other things that she brought up that she had concerns about as far as city impact. But we do collaborate on a lot of projects together where the city will put in a portion and the county will put in a portion. And a lot of it is for preservation of historic facilities and programs. And so I do see us working together.
Well, somebody needs to call a meeting. I have a joint meeting here. Is that a possibility in the next month or two?
Well, I would hope so. I asked for it to be on a quarterly basis when we had our first one. Mm-hmm. And then there were some conflicts with schedules, and then it just never got back on the agenda. But I did reach out to Chair Bronson because it really has to do with the mayor's office and Chair Bronson's office to coordinate that with our clerk.
All right. I want to talk school business with you. You can put on your school chairmanship hat after we take the break. And by the way, how many times in your 20 years on the board have you been the chair? Is this the third time?
I believe it's the fourth.
Fourth.
I believe it's the fourth. Yeah. But, you know, I've been on 19 years, so it's okay.
There you go.
Fine.
Right now, Adelaida Grijalva, I want to talk about bakery goods. That's something I think everybody, I think everybody in the city, whether you're a city resident or a county resident, can agree that we like bakery goods. I know I do, and I'm sure you do as well, right?
Yeah, I do.
Mona's Danish Bakery is what I'm talking about. Home of the Danish Kringle, that light and tasty multi-layered pastry filled with those wonderful fillings. I kind of lean toward the almond. But anyway, there's a lot more than the Kringle up there, including some wonderful peanut butter cookies that I'm now back into, along with a chocolate croissant. Ooh, I think that's going to be my Saturday morning go-to bakery good from Mona's Danish Bakery. Open right now for lunch, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. We'll have more with Adelaida Grijalva right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on an overcast, kind of rainy day, which is nice. We are still technically until October 1st in that monsoon sweepstakes to see if we can. Right now, we're number three for the all-time monsoon summer rainy season. This one being very productive. We got about an inch to go, so we've got some ground to make up. But October 1 will be the deadline. Adelita Grijalva is with us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And, of course, we are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. Adelita Grijalva is a Democrat representing District Number 5 on the five-member Pima County Board of Supervisors, and she is chair of the five members of the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. And for those that didn't follow this, Layla Counts was the chairman, the head of the board, and she had to step aside. She had some the job was really, there was a lot of work that's involved with the chairmanship, and she stepped aside. And Adelita, you are you're back in the position, as you mentioned before the break, the fourth time. You've actually seen and sat among a lot of different boards, different configurations. This one seems to be pretty darn good as far as folks getting along, correct?
Yes, I would agree with that. Yep, we have a really really motivated group of parents. All of us are parents. I think that makes a big difference. You know, we're all motivated by what I believe are the right reasons, which are the students in our schools and being responsive. We're attending different events, which is great. And so, you know, I was at an event yesterday with board member Luna Rose. I've attended another one, and Dr. Gavoy Shaw was there. Clerk Sadie Shaw is attending a lot of events, and you know, Ms. Counts is visiting campuses and talking with people too. And so I do think it's good for us to be accessible, and we seem to have a pretty active group of board members, and we're all getting along, which is great. We don't agree all the time, but I think that that's okay too.
Remember the board meetings used to go to all sometimes after midnight?
Yes.
1 a.m. might have been one of the longest.
Yes, you're pretty, I remember.
are you pretty much sitting down and kind of just taking care of business?
Yes, and I think we're not getting into attacks on staff members. We're not. We're still accessible to call to the audience, but we have some pretty pointed, you know, people are writing about the mask mandate or writing about different issues. We haven't had, they're obviously concerns, but I think we're all really focused on how to ensure that we keep our schools open and safe. And so we haven't, We're just really focused on what the issues are, what votes do we have to have. And a lot of, we have new board members. And so I think it's okay for them to ask questions about the historical perspective or why we do certain things. That's always normal when, you know, you have a new cycle of board members come in, but everyone is doing their homework and prepared for meetings. And I'm really happy with that. I think it serves our community well.
How about the mask situation?
Yeah, we have an item on the agenda actually tonight regarding masks. And so we'll get some legal advice and have to make a decision whether our district is going to continue with a mask requirement past September 29th or not.
Yeah, because that date is the date that the Arizona law kicks in, basically banning the masks in classrooms. So TUSD is not alone. There are other school districts that decided to require masks. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And I guess you'll hear from your attorneys tonight.
We will. And I do think, you know, and across the country, there have been school districts and cities that have fought against different governors, like our governor, that have decided that the pandemic is over. And so we don't need to have any mitigation strategies in our schools, even though most of our students are not vaccinated. And you know, in our elementary schools, none of them have had the opportunity because they're not old enough to get vaccinated. And so our job is to keep our children safe and keep our schools open and keep our staff safe. And this board is taking that job very seriously.
Well, every day I look at that dashboard on the Arizona Department of Health Services website, and some do think, oh, this is all over. Well, that's not the numbers, Adelita
No.
Grijalva, that I'm seeing. Today I think we're about 260 cases. Yesterday was down below 200. But I'm telling you, it looks like it's pretty much 200 to 300 cases a day.
Right. And our schools, Pima County has a dashboard as well that breaks it down by school district. And we, you know, we're relying on the school districts to report that. But if you look at the population size of each district and the number of positive cases, mask usage is making a difference. It is a mitigation factor that is working. Dr. Garcia mentioned at our Board of Supervisors meeting on Tuesday that he was putting together a report on the efficacy of mask use and the difference that it's making. And I think it's important for us to look at all of the data and the science and not make decisions based on hearsay or popular opinion on the internet. I mean, we have to go with what we know is working, and the data clearly shows that.
How about your own kids? You know, all this started 18 months ago. Your kids back in the classroom. Is there a different attitude among your children interfacing with other children rather than using a computer?
Then alone, yes. Yeah. Well, actually, so my two oldest that were vaccinated, they started school, and my youngest stayed home until last week. And last week at the change of the quarter, we put him back in school. And the reason why we did that is because we noticed that there was a significant drop in his ability to sort of navigate that process. A lot of it has to do with the teacher. And our TUSD virtual online academy, they're doing a great job, but we just had a huge influx of students that we weren't expecting in a very short period of time. So just to give you an idea, one board meeting, we had 700 students enrolled. 2 weeks later, we had 1,200. By the beginning of school, we had 2,400.
Mm.
And that's sort of where we're hovering. And so depending on what happens with this mask requirement, we could see an influx of students because they don't want their children to wear masks, or because, you know, whatever happens at the board meeting, there's some concern about whether students on campus and staff are going to wear masks. So we see a lot of changes, and that stability is it's huge.
So it sounds like it changes almost every day on some whether students are going to come to school or go to online.
Oh no. There's periods of time. So
okay.
If you decide that you're going to stay on, then you have a window in which to go back on campus, because every child that's enrolled in the TUVA, Tucson Unified Virtual Academy, has a spot on a campus. And so my son was always a Carrillo student. It's just we transitioned him back into the classroom. And he seems happier, frustrated now that he has paper homework, but like you had homework regardless.
Yeah.
So, you know, but then we also have a concern with, I think our last number was 50 students that are quarantined right now because they were exposed to somebody with COVID or have COVID. And so that's also a rolling number. Depending on whether a student is vaccinated or not, they're either sent home that day and can come back if they're vaccinated. If they're not, they stay out, I think it's for 5 days, and have a negative COVID test, they can come back, or they wait the full 10 days of quarantine. And so that number continues to go. So, our education system right now is just a series of trying to educate while keeping people healthy, and our teachers are doing an amazing job, but it is a Herculean task.
It really is, and so many moving parts. As they say, it's a very fluid situation, to say
it
the
is.
Least. All right, Adelita Grijalva, we will let you go. Thank you very much for joining us, and I hope you have a great rest of the day.
Thank you so much. It was really nice to hear your voice. I hope all is going well. Stay safe.
Thanks a lot. Adelita Grijalva with us on the Buckmaster Show. Coming up next, earliest evidence of human activity found in the Americas 23,000 years ago, 10,000 years later than earlier had been thought of. It was like 13,000 was the number for the earliest evidence of humans in North America. This is kind of breaking archaeological news. Up next.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Speaking of Green Things, the go-to place for everything green for your garden, check it out. Green Things, their 13-acre site, is just, it's got everything you possibly could need for the garden. And also, when you're over there at 3384 East River Road, check out the merchandise that they have in Zocalo Village. That's their sister business. Some of that beautiful handcrafted tables from Mexico and some of them from Tucson, some beautiful mesquite wood tables. But check it out. ZocaloVillage.com is the website and GreenThingsAZ.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Using a radiocarbon dating, footprints found at White Sands National Park over in south central New Mexico provide the earliest evidence of human activity in the Americas 23,000 years ago at the height of the last glacial cycle. This is kind of breaking news in the archaeology area, and our contributor on archaeology is Bill Doley. Dr. Doley is the president and CEO of Archaeology Southwest, a nonprofit organization based here in Tucson. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. Good to be here.
This is kind of big news, isn't it?
This is pretty exciting, and thank you for turning me on to it.
Yeah, so, the University of Arizona just released this news. The findings are described in a Science Journal article co-authored by a gentleman I think you know at the University of Arizona, archaeologist Vance Holliday.
Yes, Vance Holliday has been doing so-called Paleo-Indian research at the UVA School of Anthropology. And are we ready to jump into this?
We are. And to set the table here, from what I understand, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I guess that few in your field, Bill Doley, saw reliable evidence of sites older than about, 16,000 years?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's really comfortable. I mean, this is the big issue of sort of peopling the new world, and people are very comfortable. There's lots of evidence of Clovis big game hunters about 13,000 years ago. When you get into that 13 to 16,000 range, even there people argue, but we're jumping back now, to this 23,000 year old time frame. So, it's ultimately, I'm sure there will be some controversy, but I think they've got a pretty good evidence base. And should we share a little bit about where this is and what they're finding?
Yes, what are they finding? And I know White Sands, I've been there a couple of times. I love that national park. And for those that haven't gone there, they should. It's a great spot. But go ahead. How did all of this come about, Bill?
Well, White Sands National Park is the location. It's geological setting there is called the Tularosa Basin. And a basin, a river doesn't flow out of a basin. The water goes down to the center of a basin and accumulates. So there has been a perennial lake called Lake Otero out in that environment. And so it's in the sediments in probably a stream flowing into that lake. People found 7 or 8 stratified layers of ground surface that have human footprints in them. And so usually archaeologists are working with artifacts, and there's a Clovis is well established at it's 13,000 years ago because there's these giant spear points that people find, and they're associated with mammoths. But in this case, it's not so much artifacts, it's the footprints themselves that are what are being documented.
And how did they document the footprints then, Bill?
Well, it took excavation. They weren't on the ground surface, so they've excavated down, and that's how they've got these multiple layers. And I've got the science article up on my screen, and I'm looking at the footprints right now. And you look at them and you say, boy, no argument that those are human footprints. It's like being down at the beach and seeing your own footprints. So that's always an exciting thing. You know, it really, you know, makes the link to past people a direct one. And what's kind of cool in my quick assessment of the article is that they've analyzed these footprints, and their conclusion is that there's actually not a lot of adult footprints there. They're mostly like teenagers and a fair number of children. So they're actually making a guess as to what may be going on out there, is that people are going down. These teenagers are being basically sent out to fetch water and bring it back to camp, and that they're being accompanied by other smaller children. So it's a very human story. People back in this era probably would have used things like gourds or skin bags as water containers. So there's not any, you know, broken pottery out there. This is way, way, way before you have pottery containers and that sort of thing.
And I understand the tracks of some animals were also found at the same site.
Yeah. So basically the I'm not sure what species they're talking about, but basically like mammoths or those proboscideans, as they are referred to. There is some evidence of the big game that the later Clovis hunters would have been hunting as well. So this kind of wet environment where, you know, things deposit over footprints fairly quickly and preserve them is a very special kind of environment, and it's been very productive out here.
Now, to compare, Bill Doley, the 23,000 years at White Sands, what about Tucson, our own area? What is the oldest documented evidence of human habitation in our area?
Well, Southern Arizona is, you know, famous for these Clovis sites. So down near Naco and the border in southeastern Arizona, there have been major discoveries of Clovis artifacts associated with mammoths and bison and that are now extinct. So we're, you know, kind of a showcase for the Clovis era, and as Vance Holliday. There were a whole slew of authors. Vance Holliday was one of the co-authors. There's folks from the U.S. Geological Survey, from White Sands National Park, and I didn't even get to go through all the authors of this article. But point that Vance Holliday makes in his statement is this is 10,000 years before Clovis. So that's a big, big chunk of time. And the other thing, there's always debates about, you know, the techniques used to date something, and they, you know, make a really strong case. There's actually some little seeds that they were doing radiocarbon dating, and that will probably be the thing that people discuss of, like, you know, the reliability of the dating everything always has a controversy.
Oh yes, I'm sure you and your colleagues, Bill, are going to have plenty to chew over. But it's not very often here on the program that we kind of get breaking news in your field, and this certainly is it today. Is today, and I really appreciate it. And Bill, before we go, I want to tell everybody I'm a member of your fine organization of Archaeology Southwest. I urge others to join as well. Where can people find out more?
The website's the best place to go, www.archaeologysouthwest.org. And our connecting places and stories of the past to people and values of the present is what we try to accomplish. And I appreciate having the opportunity to share this kind of information here with you, Bill.
I appreciate it as well. And again, this is a really big story. Really, for everybody, it's the kind of story that might be on the front page of a lot of papers tomorrow, and I'm glad we could kind of get the scoop here a little early with you, Bill. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
All right, Bill Doley. Coming up next, what about these Arizona football Wildcats? Where in the world does this program go from here? Anthony Jimino's next on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? Well, not all news is good news. You know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Wow, what perfect temperatures over in Silver City. Tom just pulled up upper 40s next week over in Silver. So it's just that three-hour drive. This would be a great weekend to get away. Head over to Silver City and enjoy the environment of Southwest New Mexico. Their website is, appropriately enough, Southwest New Mexico, spelled out .org. You'll find what to do and where to stay, and there's a lot in both those categories, a lot of choices for you. A great time of year to visit the land of enchantment. Anthony Jimeno has been covering sports in our town for almost a quarter of a century. His latest project, he's the co-founder of something that's doing very well. It's a local blog called AllSportsTucson.com. Anthony co-wrote a book on Arizona basketball, 100 Things Arizona Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. And he is with us on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And he's also, by the way, the senior editor of Lindy's Football Annuals. Anthony, how are you?
Doing good. I think we should let people know that we had this scheduled before Arizona lost to NAU.
We did.
So it's not like we're piling on. It's just we were expecting to talk about football and a win and the Pac-12 season coming up, but anybody wants to talk about it, the loss.
From a news point of view, I'm glad that our first interview was postponed until now, because it's actually getting pretty darn interesting. The Arizona Republic says that the Wildcat 15-game losing streak is now getting close to historic proportions for the state. The Diamondbacks have lost, or did at one point lose, 17 games, as did the Phoenix Suns. ASU men's basketball 15, Arizona men's basketball 14 back in that season of 82 and 83. So the question here is, where does this program go from here?
Well, I think it's a good question, Bill. It's a good question. I mean, it's three games into the Jed Fish era. So he inherited a team that doesn't have an abundance of talent. I mean, you can identify certain guys that are definitely Pac-12 quality players. You know, Stanley Berryhill, the receiver on offense, is having a great season. There's a couple of defenders. But you sure don't look at anybody and say, that's an all-conference guy. That's an all-conference guy. That's an all-conference guy. And when you have a roster like that and they're not particularly deep, there's only so much you can do. I get it. Nobody expected them to lose to NAU. And, you know, there's a lot of talk of, has Arizona hit rock bottom?
Yes.
I'd say that they already did.
Yes.
I mean, to me, the 70-7 losing to ASU at the end of last year, mm-hmm. that's going to leave a far more permanent mark than losing to NAU.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think NAU fans are going to start putting billboards up on the highway talking about a 70-7 loss like ASU did. So to me, they've been there at rock bottom. Jed Fish, I thought, won the off season. He did a great job of doing what he could to get some hope, interest, optimism. All that's now gone away. You know,
yeah.
I think you can, and I think the only way you get a lot of the people back is by winning. So now it's just, can you hold the team together? Which I thought was always going to be his number one priority. It's great. You mm-hmm. have a fun off season and you do all the marketing, but the true test is what's going to happen when they start to lose. Can you keep the guys together? Can you keep them playing hard? Can you keep all their body language positive? Are they still listening to their coaches? Are they not transferring in droves? And if you can do that and yeah. keep the recruiting class intact, okay, then you got a chance. But we know this is going to be a multi-year rebuilding project.
Well, I'll tell you, if they can hang with Oregon, for a quarter or something? No, more than a quarter. If they can just maybe beat the spread on this thing, I think they're an underdog by 4 touchdowns or something. But, I mean, if they come out and they really try to play hard the whole ball game, I think people are willing to, you know, I think UCLA is then right the next home game after Oregon.
It is.
Yeah, I think people will come back, and they understand that this is really a work in progress.
Yeah, I think the two things I wanted to see, basically, do they play hard, or do they look like they're having fun?
Yeah.
I mean, and sometimes, a lot of times, those two things go hand in hand. But with that is that whole premise of, are they playing for head coach Jed Fish?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think we could tell, even as outsiders of the last year or two, you know, I'm not sure these guys were totally buying into Kevin Sumlin.
Right.
I don't think Kevin Sumlin did not do anything to help the fans who really wanted to root for him, right?
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't I'm in his corner, I'm pulling for him, he's got to get this. You know, I think Jed still has that. You know, I think people, based on what they've seen of Jed, would like him to succeed and can get behind him.
Right.
It's going to take a while. I guess the good thing is the Pac-12, which is a little different than in recent years, seems a little more top-heavy in terms of, okay, you got Oregon, number three team in the country. UCLA until last week was right around the top 10 or so. There's a lot of really average to not-so-good teams in this league. So maybe if Arizona puts it all together for a week, if they can identify a quarterback and all that good stuff, yeah, maybe they can steal a game or two along the way, because the league's not all that great.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that they can steal a game or maybe even two. That would be really the icing on the cake. So this young man who played at Central Florida University, I think he played maybe even
South Florida.
What was that?
South Florida.
Okay, not Central Florida's a better ball club, I guess.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
So, but he played or started even, what, 17 games?
I can't remember the exact number, but he started across parts of a couple seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Got into the game in the fourth quarter last week, you know, led them to that touchdown drive and just going to convert the two-point conversion to tie. But at this stage, I think it's either going to be Jordan McLeod, who we're talking about, or Gunnar Cruz, who started the first two games for Arizona. And I know Jed Fish has talked. I mean, he talked today, as a matter of fact, of he really wants to focus on finding one guy now and let that guy run with it. You know, no more of the two quarterbacks unless, you know, circumstances really demand it. But find one guy and turn him loose and find stuff that one guy can do real well. And that's kind of the issue. They have, you know, their quarterbacks are kind of an issue. Some of the play calling and the play calls themselves, the design of it, maybe they're genius. I don't know. But the quarterbacks, no matter who it is, seem to be having trouble running it.
Mm-hmm.
So find something that your starting quarterback could do and do well and go from there. So it's a learning process, right, Bill?
It is. And
pains were guaranteed.
And maybe Oregon's looking at this game as, you know, it's kind of hard for us guys to get up for this Arizona team. So,
well,
yeah, who knows?
Hey, I have seen, you know what? You know, many, many, many years ago, 29 years ago, Arizona went to Miami. Miami was ranked number one in the country.
I remember.
Had like a 54 game home winning streak in the Orange Bowl.
Yep.
Arizona, like this week, they were 4 touchdown underdogs. And it turned out to be an 8-7 loss with Steve McLaughlin just missing a field goal.
I remember. That was a Dick Tomey team.
Yeah. And even though they lost that day, that was basically the birth of the Desert Swarm.
It really was.
From that point,
that's right.
They went on and they had the 5-game winning streak, which ended with them beating number one Washington.
Yeah.
So,
I was there at that game. So good point, Anthony.
I'm not saying that's happening again, Bill. I'm not saying that.
All right.
But I'm just saying I've seen a lot of things.
Me too. Thank you so much, Anthony. Anthony Jimeno, always a pleasure. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. Hope you enjoyed our hour. Lots of content there for you. On behalf of Anthony Jimeno and Tom Fairbanks Engineering and Producing, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Dave Ramsey's next.